Good morning. The day for which we have been waiting, praying, preparing, has arrived. The hour to which we have been looking forward through a whole night of vigil has come. The announcement is made. He is not here. He has been raised. Behold the place where they laid him. Easter has dawned. Easter is the culmination, not just of the Easter vigil, not just of the season of Lent, but of the whole process that God began with creation. And that's where we began last night, with creation. With the readings and reflections that were put together for the vigil this year, it was interesting. They interlocked with one another and were particularly complex, showing more than one side of just about every time and book we touched upon. Looking at creation, we were reminded not only that this is a sacrament of God's goodness and God's glory, but also that it is a charge upon us, a charge that we, more often than not, fail to answer. The second hour, before looking at Abraham, as we usually do, there was a little detour through Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, Noah, the Tower of Babel, the whole history of human falling away from the goals that God has set for us. It contrasts so starkly with the faithfulness of Abraham, leaving his homeland and going out in response to God's command. And the third reading, always Exodus. Always the great triumphant miracle where God brought our people out of Egypt and made us free. And we celebrated that. But we were also reminded that while we identify quite readily and quite appropriately with the children of Israel whom God liberated from slavery in Egypt, we also need to identify with Pharaoh. Because in many ways, we are Pharaoh to our fellow human beings. See them? Forth and back, each one. The fourth hour looked at the death of Moses and added a contemplation of the very parallel death of Dr. Martin Luther King, who gave that famous "I have been to the mountain" speech the night before he was murdered. Why is it that neither of these great prophets entered the promised land? They led their people to the promised land, but did not enter it themselves. Is there something about that? Is there something about the leader not entering that makes it possible? Is it a necessary part of the process? What kind of sacrifice does that imply? What kind of spiritual heroism does it take for Moses to die in peace on Mount Nebo, or for Dr. King to say, "It really doesn't matter to me. I have been to the mountain. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." Both sides. Then we looked at David. Good old David, one of the great leaders of God's people, greatly beloved of God, very much in love with God. Also, a murderer, an adulterer, a conspirator, and a few other things one would not consider generally reputable. How does it happen? How does it fit together? And what does that say about the struggle that we go through to live out God's promise, to live out God's plan, to move evolution forward a little notch. Certainly, there's a lot of paradox involved. And then we looked at perhaps the ultimate paradox in the Tanakh, the suffering servant songs. Scholarship, we were reminded, has looked at that from many directions, especially in recent decades. It applies, as the Ethiopian eunuch asked, is he speaking of himself or of someone else? The answer is probably both. He's speaking of himself. He's speaking of Israel as a corporate entity. And of course, as Philip explains, he's speaking of Jesus, the one who is the servant of God, servant, child. It's the same word in Greek, one of them, pais. The pais theou, the servant of God, the child of God, who suffers by taking on the suffering of the world, absorbing it like a paper towel. There's a new image, Jesus is the paper towel. Soaking up the suffering of the world, soaking up the pain of humanity. Israel has certainly done that over the last 3,000 years. Jesus certainly did that in his lifetime. And we were told, reminded, that we are called to do that, to be part of the suffering servant, to absorb the suffering of the human race, and in absorbing it, to transform it. Then we looked at an interesting pair of figures. We looked at Esther. We looked at the Book of Lamentations. They seem to have such different outcomes, such different climates. Esther is a triumphant book, a celebration of the seemingly impossible triumph of faith over oppression, of hope over tyranny. Yes, she, in the middle there, takes her life in her hands and makes a very courageous act. But from the author's point of view, telling the story, it's clear from the beginning what happens at the end. And the whole thing is a great celebration. As you know, if you've ever been to a synagogue during Purim, you know, it is practically raucous the way it is celebrated. But then Lamentations, written after the fall of Jerusalem, the other side. It appears that nothing will ever happen again. It appears that we are bereft of hope, bereft of life. The roads to Zion mourn for lack of pilgrims. Two different stories, two different emphases, but all along the process of our people. From the beginning of creation, all the way up to Christ's own time. And all of that is summed up in the incarnation, in the birth, in the life, in the ministry, in the death, and ultimately, as we celebrate this day, in the resurrection of Jesus. Jesus is the completion of the outpouring of God, this kenosis that we've been talking about all week, this self-emptying of God. In Jesus' own kenosis, his self-emptying that comes to completion in being obedient, even unto death on a cross. That not only makes him fully one of us, any death would have done that, it goes beyond and sets the example for who we should be, even death on a cross. We are called to be the suffering servant as he is the suffering servant. But it doesn't end there. And that's well. Because if it did, it would literally end there. If that's what we heard, you are called upon to be God's paper towel and to absorb the suffering of the world and then die. We'd quit. All of us. I'm not going to do that. Eat, drink, and be merry if tomorrow we die. Why go out and absorb other people's suffering? Why work for peace and justice? Why care? Why pour myself out if we die and stay dead, if that's the end? Now that humanity has its hands on the wheel, steering evolution, if there is no resurrection, we're all out of here. But the announcement of the angel this morning, behold, he is not here. He has been raised up. That is what gives the necessary element of hope to the whole process. That's what makes it possible for Jesus' kenosis to become our kenosis. Because Jesus' theosis also becomes our theosis. As Jesus is lifted up into God, having poured himself out in perfect imitation of who God is, he is now lifted up into the life of God in his very humanity. So we, being joined with him, being buried with him in baptism, we are also raised with him to new life, as Paul told us in that first reading. It is our divinization. It's a strange word in the West. We think of that, maybe they go too far. But it's a popular theme among the Eastern Fathers. They don't hesitate to say that you and I are divinized. Jesus is not, as that mistranslation of the creed says, the only Son of God. Jesus is the only begotten Son of God. But you and I are the daughters and sons of God, because he has shared and set the standard for our kenosis. He now shares with us and sets the standard for our theosis. We are brought, lifted up into the very life of God, the life of the Trinity itself. We become a part of. As we pour ourselves out, God fills us up. Jesus poured himself out ultimately on the cross. And he was filled up ultimately at the resurrection, exaltation, ascension, glorification. Whatever label you choose to put on it, all of them fit. And as it was for him, so shall it be for us. We share in his death. We share in his emptying out. We share in our pouring ourselves out. And as we pour ourselves out, God fills us up, lifts us up, brings us into the very life of the Trinity. He has become completely one with us, even unto death on a cross. And now we become completely one with him, even into the interpersonal love of the Trinity itself. Sisters and brothers, happy Easter.